Following are comments on Ben Jonson's Volpone, or The Fox, Act 1. Act 1, Scene 1. Good morning to the day, and next my gold. Volpone greets his beloved gold and, with Mosca's assistance, muses on the shape and quality of his life for the near term. In Act 1, Scene 1, Volpone's startling apostrophe to the morning sunshine and his golden treasure tells us a lot about him. Quote, unquote, good morning to the day, and next my gold. Open the shrine that I may see my saint. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 1 through 2. We see that this wealthy, single, childless man cherishes having a direct relationship to his money, his gold. He venerates it, even as he plays the charlatan to acquire still more of it. Volpone casts himself as a sun worshipper, and he figuratively associates the sun's golden color with the precious metal that he so loves, treating both as an object of worship. On one track, Volpone is an energetic grifter, and on the other, we might think he's a pure miser. But he insists to Mosca that what he really values isn't so much the solid gold he sees before him, but the getting of it. As he puts the case, quote unquote, I glory more in the cunning purchase of my wealth than in the glad possession. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 30 through 32. Why is that, we may ask? Well, Volpone explains it's because he has always earned his money without exploiting truly innocent people. He is not what today we would call an abusive captain of industry who makes his living by ruthlessly exploiting common laborers, laying dangerous ventures upon merchants or anything of that sort. He isn't even a usurious banker or moneylender. It seems as if Volpone is admitting that he has earned his money by carrying out con jobs against other people who are at least as greedy as he himself is. Either that, or he inherited money and later went into business as a con artist. Ben Jonson, like Shakespeare and his fellow Elizabethan Jacobean playwrights, lived during the early modern age, which saw proto-capitalist practices and mindsets beginning to flourish in England. Even though the Elizabethan age marked the beginning of the mercantilist period, emphasizing trade balances to grow the nation's wealth and capitalize on colonial exploration and acquisition, Jonson's protagonist, Volpone, participates in this current of action and thinking. He is a sort of entrepreneur who thrives on his nimble wits, his cunning, as he calls it, and gets the advantage of the grifters and squirming human bags of appetite who congregate around him. In the Communist Manifesto of 1848, Karl Marx describes well the dynamic quality of the capitalist order, its productivity twinned with its breakneck instability. There is something of that, however prematurely, in the frantic chasing after money that we see in Volpone. Jonson's Venice is a society in which, to borrow Marx's language, quote unquote, all that is solid melts into air, all that is holy is profaned. In Marx's hopeful, almost messianic vision, the upshot would be that, quote unquote, man is at last compelled to face with sober senses his real conditions of life and his relations with his kind, thus paving the way for the coming on of a new age in which exploitation will be no more. Well, let's put a pin in paradise for now and note instead that in Volpone, everyone is frantically running around trying to find ways to make their identity and their circumstances less unstable than they presently are. What is Volpone's game at the play's outset? He is an old bachelor with no children, and he's sitting on a pile of gold. Lately, it has occurred to him to start a con job against those nasty human birds of prey, Voltore, Corvino, and Corbaccio, among other characters. For 3 years now, he has been staying home and pretending to be nearing his miserable end, sick of many ailments. The con artist project seems to be working like a life-saving elixir, too. Volpone's marks keep dropping by to check up on their poor, suffering, rich friend, hoping all the while that he'll soon wheeze his last, right after their personal warmth and lavish offerings deliver his treasure into their waiting laps. Johnson's era shared an obsession with health and the lack thereof, in spite of its being the beginning of the scientific age, which brought many new advances. Doctoring was still not sufficiently better than witchcraft to make a person anything less than profoundly anxious whenever the topic of health arose. The plague was still a going thing, and a menacing one at that, and doctors, for all their bold experimentation during the Renaissance, were as likely to kill the patient as mitigate or remove the diseases they confronted. Volpone uses his own faked ill health, his phony imminent demise, to great psychological effect, and it should be no surprise that when in the second act he needs to disguise himself to get a love interest's attention, he chooses to adopt the identity of one Scotto of Mantua, quackseller of worthless medicines. A third interest is, of course, the lust of the eyes, sex, a taste for variety, however we want to define this interest. Volpone describes himself as a seeker of pleasure, a hedonist. He says to Mosca, quote unquote, "What should I do but cocker up my genius and live free to all delights my fortune calls me to?" Act 1, Scene 1, lines 70 through 72. His status as an allegedly ailing, definitely rich bachelor, he chortles, makes him interesting. It makes him the center of a fair number of people's attention. In a sense, then, this huckster, Volpone, is, as we would say, in it for the likes. And as such, he resembles some modern people who get a rush from others' attention to their podcast or YouTube channel. At the heart of Volpone's enterprise, we may surmise, is a deal of vanity twinned with just as much insecurity. In the end, he has no legitimate heirs, so what's it all for, aside from this invented drama stemming from the silly play-acting of an English malade imaginaire? There seems to be a hole, a zone of sterility, at the center of Volpone's enterprise. And what are we to make of Mosca so far, Volpone's parasite, his fly? It's hard to miss the sycophancy of this character's additions to the fox's self-congratulatory musings about the wholesomeness of his profession. He tells Volpone, quote unquote, "You loathe the widow's or the orphan's tears should wash your pavements." Act 1, Scene 1, lines 49 through 50. To borrow a definition from Oscar Wilde, a disciple is someone who, quote unquote, "stands behind one's throne and at the moment of one's triumph whispers in one's ear that after all, one is immortal." The source of that gem is Wilde's A Few Maxims for the Instruction of the Overeducated from the Saturday Review, 1894. Like so much else in the play, however, our view of Mosca is bound to change. He will begin to place himself near the epicenter of the action and assert more control over events. Act 1, Scene 2. "Here is enclosed the soul of Pythagoras, that juggler divine." Volpone watches a show put on by his entertainer servants, Nano and Androgyno, apparently at Mosca's direction. In Act 1, Scene 2, Volpone's servants, Nano and Androgyno, with Castrone playing his part silently, put on a show for him grounded in the transmigrations of Pythagoras's soul over time. Methuen New Mermaid's editor Robert Watson remarks astutely of this strange little episode that it functions in part as an introduction or overture to Johnson's inclusion of the style of hashing out the comically convoluted, quote-unquote, moot cases at the ends of court that lawyers in training used to sharpen their skills. See the introduction, Roman numeral, page 20. It also seems reasonable to suppose that Ben Johnson likes the scene's Pythagorean emphasis on change, or to use that favorite Ovidian word, metamorphosis. Much of the entertainment revolves around insults made against Protestants, as Ben Jonson had converted to Catholicism while in prison for the killing of Gabriel Spencer in 1598 in a duel. But the upshot of it all is a song that one or two of the performers apparently sing about the superiority of the fool's position and perspective in life. The song runs in part, quote unquote, "Fools, they are the only nation worth men's envy or admiration, free from care or sorrow taking, themselves and others merry making. All they speak or do is sterling." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 66 through 70. Volpone is pleased, perhaps because the fool is granted a good deal of liberty to say and do as he pleases. Does our fox, with his love of the freedom money can buy, connect himself with this vision of fools? Most likely. There is something about the flow of Pythagoras's identity, perhaps, that seems like the exchanges that come with the career or life, so to speak, of a bit of money. From one cash nexus to the next, it goes on its merry way. Mosca even claims that wealth is better than learning, a view which, surprisingly, he takes farther than Volpone, who had said, quote-unquote, "Yes, to be learned, Mosca," Act 1, Scene 2, line 109. In any case, it's time for the fox to get down to the business of pretending to be at death's door. But it's nothing he can't do. He has, he tells us at the end of Act 1, Scene 2, been pulling it off for 3 years now. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 124 through 128. Act 1, Scene 3. "You are his heir, sir." Mosca tells Voltore, the attorney, that he will be Volpone's inheritor, and Volpone collects a silver plate as the reward for his strenuous efforts at playing a man near death. In Act 1, Scene 3, Voltore, the attorney, or advocate, the vulture, arrives to hand over to Volpone a plate of solid silver, taking him aside as Volpone runs through his false sickness paces. Mosca tells Voltore that he is, in fact, the fox's heir, and leans on him to make him a servant of his family, telling him, quote-unquote, "I am lost, except the rising sun do shine on me." Act 1, Scene 3, lines 36 through 37. Mosca repeats this request in a more poetical, if rather grotesque, patch, towards the scene's end, quote-unquote, "When you do come to swim in golden lard, up to the arms in honey, that your chin is borne up stiff with fatness of the flood, think on your vassal." Act 1, Scene 3, lines 70 through 73. Does this honey-drenched imagery indicate how deranged Mosca thinks the sensibilities of the greedy advocate Voltore must be? What sane person would want to swim in a sticky vat of honey? Act 1, Scene 4. What a rare punishment is avarice to itself. Mosca tells Corbaccio to pressure Volpone by naming him as his heir, and the old man goes off, eager to do so. In Act 1, Scene 4, Corbaccio, the raven, visits Volpone, and Mosca's opening tack is to commiserate with the old gentleman over the increasingly sick Volpone's apparent dislike of doctors and their medicines. As he hears Mosca relate Volpone's symptoms, Corbaccio says he feels younger by the minute. Quote unquote, "This makes me young again by a score of years." Act 1, Scene 4, line 56. But Mosca's main thrust is to advise Corbaccio to go home and change his will so that it names Volpone, and not his own son, Bonario, as his heir. He tells him, quote unquote, "Frame a will whereto you shall inscribe my master, your sole heir." Act 1, Scene 4, lines 93 through 94. He also flatters Corbaccio, steeped in age as he is, that he is certain to outlive the supposedly dying Volpone. Volpone is delighted with Mosca's clever performance and exclaims, quote unquote, "What a rare punishment is avarice to itself." Act 1, Scene 4, lines 142 through 143. Old Corbaccio sincerely believes that if he can just get hold of Volpone's fortune, he will feel years younger as if by a miracle. The man is delusional, but then that's a common affliction in comedy of all sorts, from the sentimental to the harshly satirical. We could say the same thing of Shakespearean drama in all its generic diversity. Rodri Lewis, spelling R-H-O-D-R-I-L-E-W-I-S, is one critic who has concentrated insightfully on the power of delusion in Shakespeare's tragedies. Act 1, Scene 5. I must see her. Mosca tells Volpone about Corvino's supremely beautiful wife, Celia, and his obsession shifts at once from acquiring more gold to acquiring her. In Act 1, Scene 5, it's time for the merchant Corvino, the crow, to pay his respects to Volpone by giving him a large pearl from the east. Mosca's shift with Corvino is to pretend that he has favored him by fraudulently interpreting Volpone's every mention of his name as signaling the intention to make him his heir. Quote unquote, "I asked him, whom would he have his heir?" says Mosca, and always, he insists, came to him the name Corvino. Act 1, Scene 5, lines 31 through 32. He even incites this man to sling verbal abuse at Volpone on the pretense that the sufferer can't hear him anyway. When Corvino departs, Mosca's mention of Lady Politic Would-Be as a beauty leads him to introduce Volpone to the excellence of one Celia, Corvino's wife. Mosca calls this young woman, quote unquote, "the blazing star of Italy, a wench of the first year, a beauty ripe as harvest." He also appeals to Volpone's love of a certain precious metal when he describes Celia as, quote unquote, "bright as your gold and lovely as your gold." Act 1, Scene 5, lines 108 through 109, line 114. Volpone's immediate response is, quote unquote, "I must see her." Act 1, Scene 5, line 123. And with that impulsive utterance, the con-based plot shifts seismically. The fox has been outfoxed by his so-called parasite, Mosca. From now, for much of the play, Volpone's attentions will be centered on this new obsession, the heavenly Celia, and his own plotting to gain additional wealth by feigning illness will be enlisted in the service of this obsession. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Tuesday, June 24th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the revised Methuen New Mermaids edition of 2019.